Hello and welcome to the 2012 Integrated Marketing Virtual Conference. I'm Ethan Bolt. I'm the Chief Content Officer of Direct Marketing IQ, your go-to resource for direct marketing intelligence. And I'm very pleased to welcome you to this session, Legendary Creative Strategies for Customer Acquisition and Retention. Speakers will be Grant Johnson and Anthony Policastro. First, though, I just want to get you through some tips. Before we get started, if you have any technical issues, you can troubleshoot by clicking on the widget at the bottom of the console. It's marked with a question mark. Or you can let us know via the Ask a Question, via the question and answer box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists, and we will address those at the end of the session. Also, make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer. You want to make sure you check out the Tips for Attendees widget to learn how you can customize your viewing experience today. And if you do leave the session at any time or would like to view it again later, don't forget that we will be archiving the entire show today. So in this on-demand environment, we're going to have it up and running starting Monday, August 20th. And last, don't forget to share this session, hashtag IMV12. So, you know, as a marketer, how do you not only be present in multiple channels, but how do you also be relevant and engaging in order to win over prospects and retain existing customers? Well, basically, you want to develop robust creative, including story building across multi-channel platforms. And this includes learning how the customer helps build the story and how brands need to radiate an empathetic personality through story. Develop keen understanding of the data and what to do with it. You also need to understand the three media types, earned, paid, and owned, in relation to story building. And you want to test copy and messaging, offers, and more the right way. Yes, this session is going to cover all that and much more, including several case studies of successful creative campaigns. Grant Johnson will begin, and he's an internationally recognized speaker. He's a creative director. He's a thought leader, author, teacher, and measurable marketing strategist and copywriter that employs multi-cross-channel strategies to drive real-world quantifiable ROMI is what he calls it. He has a lot of clients, and they include Microsoft, Humana, 13 different Blue Cross plans, Milwaukee Tool, VFW, Omaha Steaks, General Mills, Quicken Loans, Harley Davidson, and many more. Anthony Policastro is a senior web analyst in the analytics group at the Martin Agency, and he provides expert analysis and documentation of web properties for optimization and best practices user experience. He currently works on the Walmart, Tylenol, BF Goodrich, and ExxonMobil accounts, among others. So without further ado, I'm going to hand it over to Grant.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Ethan, for that introduction, and I'm looking forward to this session. Just so everybody knows, I will have quite a few slides that I will go through in my allotted time. Of course, we're here to answer questions. Lots of good stuff here, a lot of stuff to cover in a little bit of time, so we're going to get right at it. So based on the title of the session, I wanted to look quickly at prospecting. So let's look at prospecting, and when you're doing prospecting, looking for new customers, really it's all about relevancy. Ethan had mentioned it in the opening. We know that. We understand that as marketers, but the key is, how do you achieve relevancy? Well, you really need to understand your data and the story your data tells you, as far, regardless of channel, to determine how to get to relevancy. You want to understand who's buying, who is not buying, trends that are happening within the industry or the segment that you're selling in or in and out of, competitive factors, and you need to react and test to improve your return on marketing investment. And a good example is something I cannot take credit for, but we'll talk about this in a little bit more detail. It's something I call story selling, something that Anthony calls story building. But P90X, everybody's probably familiar with P90X. They're a very successful fitness program. They actually failed 22 times, 22 different tests that were failures, really discoveries, I would say, until they found the right formula to have the right success. So you have to keep all of that in mind. And when you achieve relevancy, how you achieve relevancy in measurable marketing is really simply based on the offers you make or the messaging that you use. Again, I'll say that one more time. The offers you make or the messaging that you use, and that is really dictated through copy platforms, which we'll get to in a little bit. So keep those in mind. One of the key things that I always tell people is when you're conceiving your campaign, thinking about it, and when you start to actually sit down and write ads or direct mail pieces or websites, imagine you're sitting across at a kitchen table with that prospect or that customer, and you'll be successful. Direct marketing or measurable marketing is copy-driven. That is a given. Now, visuals and how things look are very important, but the way things have shifted today is the old school used to be copy creates relevancy in direct mail. Today, it's copy plus your channel produces relevancy. And why that's important to understand is different copy styles, different copy lengths, different offers or messaging that you might use based on different channels. How you use email, for instance, versus how you use direct mail, how you write your copy might vary. So it's opening up the world for testing for us, but it's no longer homogeneous, one copy style, one copy length across multiple platforms. So as marketers, our job is really to figure out what the best media mix is and to test different copy to make it more relevant to each audience. Okay? So messaging. We want to talk a little bit about messaging as well. Messaging is really what makes your copy relevant, and how you have to do that is you have to think about the different segments. You're going to have more than one segment pretty much all the time. In B2B, you want to segment your messaging by title. Again, what's important to the CEO might be different than the CFO, might be different than the IT director. You really need to understand those audiences in B2C, and again, in nonprofits, understand your audiences, the donors, what you're asking them to do, and sell benefits and sell reasons why they should act. And acting, storytelling, we all know what that is, but I like to use a term I call story selling, which takes you to the next level. And what story selling does is at the very beginning, you incorporate a call to action. Answer this question when you're writing your copy. Now what? What is the prospect or the client supposed to do? Give them compelling reasons to act right now. So look at, again, just about any good infomercial. That is really good story selling. So keep that in mind when you're putting together your campaigns. Be specific. Specifics, not sometimes, always outsell generalities. If you're a fundraiser, be specific about the amount you want. Be specific about where the funds go. Be specific if you're not a nonprofit about what you want the next steps to be. Think specifics. They always work better than generalities. So here's a real quick case study we'll talk about. This is one of Johnson Direct's clients, which is the Veterans of Foreign War. If I say to you Veterans of Foreign War, which is a membership-based organization, what's the first thing you think of? You probably don't think about females and the veterans of foreign wars. So what they were doing was they were a single-channel marketer using direct mail across their entire prospecting base and having very varied results. Anybody that was 50 or 55 or older, they were having some good success with. 50 and younger, they were failing miserably with. So what we did is, if you remember to the first slide, we went back and said, what story is the data telling us? Well, the story for the 50 and under was, this single channel approach is no longer working. We need to segment by ethnicity, by family, by age, and females, which is now represents about 14% of the VFW's membership, the active military membership base, is a growing segment and it's being ignored. So we put together a campaign that was multi-channel, started it with social media, websites, email, and then we actually used direct mail to really close the membership. What we had to do was we had to establish credibility rather quickly with a group where there was no credibility at all, which was females and reasons why they should join the Veterans of Foreign Wars. So social media, getting people involved with social media, really starting that dialogue, getting them to talk, showing the things that the Veterans of Foreign Wars was doing, was really, really important to the success of this campaign. And we communicated, we used viral efforts, asking people who were members of the community to recruit other members. And then ultimately, what we wanted the VFW to do was get more female memberships so they could help and continue to support this important effort. So did it work? When we started working with the VFW a couple years ago, they were getting 20 new female members a month on average. Today, as I'm sitting here talking to you, they're getting over 300 a month. Now, that's not a huge number, but compared to 20, 300 is a vast improvement, and it's all about relevancy, understanding the messaging, understanding how to talk to segments, and that's what we need to do today as marketers. So that's a really good membership case study. Because this session is about measurable marketing and direct marketing, I really want you to understand this fact. A lot of people forget this. The first-time buyer is a potential client. The second-time buyer becomes the customer. So what you really want in membership organizations, for instance, the second-year renewal is usually the hardest, so we really need to get them to buy that second year and keep coming back. So keep in mind that the first time they buy from you, they're a potential client or a trier, I say. The second time they become a customer, and we want to turn them into raving fans. Keep this quote in mind whenever you're doing copy. People can only go to the places that they have already been in their minds. This is probably the most asked question I get. When I'm out there talking to clients, when I'm consulting, people don't read long copy anymore. Well, this is a truism that's been, you know, since I started in this business in the 80s. People don't read long copy or short copy. They read what interests them. So always keep the prospect in mind. Keep the copy lively, interesting from the target audience perspective. Understand that you're going to have more than one audience, so segment your copy. Again, try to talk to them like you're having a conversation. Talk to them as if you're sitting across from them at their kitchen table having a tea, a lemonade, a glass of milk, and unique copy for unique channels, which we covered earlier. That's a real big difference today. And then understanding little things, differences in copy can make a big impact. So look at this sentence. You need to know about it. Okay, why do I need to know about it? You need to know about it because it's important. And this is called the rule of reason. Now, there's really no difference between those sentences other than really because and then whatever follows that. But by adding because it's important, people think, oh, yeah, I really do need to know about it. It's one of those subliminal tricks. So next time you're doing copy, think about adding a because and a reason why and watch your results soar. So, again, how to get to relevancy today through copy in whatever channel you're playing in, whether it be broadcast TV, YouTube, social media, direct mail, email, the list goes on. You really need to understand copy platforms. You need to understand what copy drivers are going to motivate and work for different audiences. You need to test those. You need to test the order and weighting of different platforms. So we're going to talk about these in a minute, fear, greed, exclusivity. If you're leading with fear, maybe you test leading with exclusivity, because usually copy platforms aren't, you're using them and there's a leading copy platform, but you're usually using several of them in your correspondence. Again, when you think about copy, think about this fact, the right brain always wins over, your emotion always wins over logic. Not sometimes, all the time. You'll be more successful if you enter the right brain, the creative side, follow the path to the left, the analytical side. Emotion moves us. Emotion outsells intellect. I will say, however, the one caveat here is when you're in a recessed economy or when you have a really expensive thing to sell, that you have to really up the logic. You really have to up the left brain to justify the emotion. So you have to increase the amount of left brain activity you do in order to get people to respond. So quickly, some of the emotional copy drivers you can use: guilt. Religious charities use guilt a lot. Past recipients of various offers, Children's Action CAP, that's a fundraiser for children's charities. They use this very well. sort of think about it as you're better off then, and then give them sort of a guilt trip as to why they should respond. Anger. We're in the midst of very angry politics, regardless of which side you're on. Both sides are angry at one another, so you're going to look at the messages you see on TV, look at the pieces you get in the mail, look at the banner ads you click on. Anger is a very strong emotional driver used in political. Greenpeace uses it a lot. World Wildlife Fund, that's not the Wrestling Federation, that's the World Wildlife Fund. Are you fed up with is a good way to think of anger in as an emotional copy driver. Fear, medical diseases. Did you know that your chances are 1 in 10 that? Healthcare uses fear quite a bit. Someday you may need. So fear is also a very powerful copy platform that you can use and you should test. Greed, personal recognition, tax-deductible donations, premiums, incentives, you know, those you know, people by nature are greedy. Use greed to your, benefit. So, one that sort of uses greed, fear a little bit as a copy platform is this example. I had nothing to do with it, so disclaimer there. The Wall Street Journal, a true classic. This package broke so many rules. Did not use personalization. The outer envelope, if this was a smaller than a number 10, it was a window back when windows were out of vogue. This tells a story about two guys, both very successful in high school, one off to college, both had great potential. One becomes a president of a company, the other one stuck in lower middle management and can't seem to get out of the rut. The difference, of course, is the successful president read the Wall Street Journal. Now, when we think about that from a purely logical standpoint, it makes no sense because it's not going to have that type of impact usually on an individual's career. But again, this takes what I call story selling to a great level. It has a soft guarantee, not a great guarantee. But again, this is the epitome of why we test in this business. Two-sided letter. This was beat a few years ago with a four-color element added to the piece. But nonetheless, very, very successful. This is what the business reply card looked like. The envelope, I'm sorry, and then the card. And that piece that I just showed you generated over $1 billion in revenue. Again, it was recently beat as the control, but they did 30 years of testing, and they continue to test today. They understand relevancy. They understand story selling. They understand copy platforms, and those are the things that we have to incorporate into everything we do. Exclusivity. This is one of my favorites, actually. I try to use it quite a bit with our clients, regardless of, again, channel. It's great for collectibles, limited quantity, recognition premiums, higher-end charities, capital appeals. Consumer Union uses this for their magazine subscriptions. Museums use this. You're special, and we know it. A good example is this piece I got several years ago from American Express that plays off exclusivity. You've reached an important milestone. Okay, what is that? So you open it up, and it's probably hard to read, but essentially, the opening paragraph says, your level of accomplishment, Grant, speaks for itself, and you should be very proud of that. And, we've recognized that you're one of the few people who have had the success, and we want to give you this opportunity to get an American Express card. And when you read it and look at it, you go, wow, this is really well done, really uses exclusivity well, makes American Express seem like it's a card that very few people can get. And it works well for them. So that's something to keep in mind. That's one of the drivers to keep in mind when you're doing testing as well. Salvation, great for religious appeals, Red Cross, Salvation Army, United Way. You give, you're going to be saved, so on and so forth. Again, a very strong emotional appeal. So that covers retention, or I'm sorry, that covers copy platforms and prospecting. But one of the things that I do see is you should also incorporate the testing and use of those copy platforms in your retention efforts. And one of my biggest pet peeves is we spend all this money getting people to raise their hand. Yes, I'm interested in joining your organization. I'm interested in buying your product or service. And once they raise their hand and identify themselves, we don't continue to sell to them. So we have to continue to keep relevancy going by testing on the back end, once we send them additional information, by testing retention offers and retention copy platforms, again, done very seldomly from what I see on a daily basis. But when you look at retention, of course, which is so important to the success of an ongoing campaign, you have to let your customers know you appreciate them, you want to involve them. You can do that through panels, surveys, exclusive offers, exclusive surveys. Implement a formal referral program. And usually if somebody's happy, and usually it's early on in their tenure with you, they're more likely to tell other people about you. And, again, looking at the VFW case study, part of the reason that was successful is early on, once somebody became a member, we asked for referrals, and it works. People want to tell other people about something they discovered and want to let them know that this is something they should be joining in on as well. So implement a formal referral program, not just, hey, would you refer somebody, send out a letter, an email, use social media, however you want to do it, test it, and implement a formal program. Again, as I mentioned earlier, don't forget to test the back end. So I've raised my hand. I said I'm interested. Continue to test. Continue to find ways to increase the conversion rates, and you'll be well served. And probably the biggest thing I see is when people have a marketing or a testing plan, which oftentimes they don't, even when they do have one, they don't have a plan for their retention. So make sure when you're doing your planning and your strategies that you have a separate retention plan in conjunction with your marketing and testing plan. And a good example, this is one of my favorites. I got this years ago from the insurance agent I had at the time. Sent me one of these little pocket calendars, and the opening paragraph of this says, please keep in mind that an agent may not always be available when you call. And I looked at it. I said, I can't believe they're sending me this form letter and telling me that their customer service is going to stink. And consequently, what they were trying to do was retain me as a client. They actually lost me as a client because I thought if somebody can't open a letter with a better opening paragraph than that and putting me in the place where, hey, we're busy, we might not have time for you, this is exactly what you don't want to do. So it's a good example of keeping in mind you want to treat your current customers like gold. So a couple more slides, and then I'm going to turn it over to Anthony. Make sure you're doing direct marketing or measurable marketing, as I call it, and not something else. There are a lot of things, a lot of ways to sell things. If you want to sell via direct marketing or direct communication, there are three things you must do in whatever channel you have. You must make an offer or have the right messaging. You must include enough information for immediate acceptance of the offer or for them to take the next step. And you must provide a mechanism for responding to that offer, whether it's a landing page, a toll-free number, a reply card, what have you. So keep those in mind when you're going through your programs. And a little secret, again, from Roy Williams, the secret of human persuasion is to cause people to imagine doing what you want them to do. And that's a really good advice, and I think it should be followed. And, again, test, test, test. So last thing I'll leave you with before I turn it over to Anthony, I've written a couple books, but for everybody who's listening in on this seminar, if you want to send me an email, I will send you a PDF copy of my book, 99 Plus 1 for Good Measure, Bright Measurable Marketing Ideas. It covers multi-channel PR, direct mail, web, TV, telemarketing, so on and so forth. Yours free, just zap me an email, grant.johnson@johnsondirect.com, and I will send that off to you. Thanks for your time. I look forward to your questions, and now I'm going to turn it over to Anthony.
Okay, thank you. Grant, much of what you covered is a lot of stuff I'm going to cover, too. You call it story selling, and we call it story building. The terms are synonymous, and you mentioned the emotion, use of emotion, and it's precisely what we do also. So, let's move on. Okay, telling a story around the brand. Brands and products with most clearly defined personalities stand to be the most successful in the future? Powerful brands connect emotionally with consumers when they radiate an empathetic personality through the use of a story. Everyone's familiar here with the Geico Gecko, and this picture below there is a story we created, one of the TV commercials of the gecko moving, walking across the country from New York to California. And that's the story. Story building beyond storytelling. Consumers are no longer just story listeners. They are story builders. This paradigm shift makes consumers participants in the brand experience. This is what most of the new brands are doing now. This is what is a new trend, a new movement with product marketing. Successful story building involves these three levels of media types. We have paid, owned, and earned. And I'll get into and explain what all those mean. This was a study that was done by BBDO and Yahoo together, and they addressed these three types of media and why they're important. Paid media is akin to reading the synopsis of a book. It's like when you go into a bookstore and you pick up a book and you read the back cover or the inside cover. You read a couple of chapters, the first page maybe, and that's the initial impression. And brands like books are the same thing. You need to grab the consumer's attention and interest initially. And you do that with paid media, with newspapers, prints, TV, social media, etc. You grab the interest with paid media. The study found that 73% of consumers found information about a brand via paid media. 46% said a great brand is like an interesting person at a party. And then 49% of consumers said they shut out a brand if they see the same ad over and over again. And I think we've all done this after a while. If you ever watched any of the network shows on the internet, on their sites, and sometimes they have just one sponsor, and you see the same ad over and over again. And after about seven times, you're ready to click away or go to the bathroom or do something else. Why are these media important? Okay, owned media is about reading the book, getting into the characters, the plot, the setting. Use of owned media to deepen the brand consumer relationship by educating consumers about your brand and getting them to take action. The consumers want to experience brands beyond price points and product attributes. You've got to emotionally engage consumers with interesting stories about the lesser known details of your brand. Interesting stories. The car manufacturer, Mazda, an interesting story about them is that they started out years ago as a cork producer. They produced cork, and what they did was they used the cork to line the seats of automobiles for the Japanese car manufacturers. And after a while, they said to themselves, you know, maybe we should build the whole car instead of just the seats. And so Mazda was born from that. So that's kind of an interesting story that brands and products and services should kind of get out there and promote. And then earned media is probably the most important aspect of these three levels. And earned media is when a reader writes a review or shares what they learned. This is when someone is so excited and so thrilled about your product or service that they have to share it with their friends or relatives or whoever. And the media for this is obviously social media, where people can instantaneously share their feelings and what they think about a brand. And again, the study found that this is a channel for building trust, loyalty, and advocacy. And also because consumers have greater control here. So brands have to be transparent and empathetic. Anyway, 69% of the consumers understand that brands make mistakes, so it's the brand's quick and meaningful response to their mistakes that matters. This is highly important. It's pretty much goes on the line of risk management. And what you need to do here is respond quickly to anything that's going on. And social media is good for this. I'll give you an example. There was a fellow who went into a restaurant, and he said, it was my birthday, and would you mind giving me a free breakfast? And so the restaurant management said, of course not, we don't do that. You know, so he went back to the Facebook page, to his Facebook page, and wrote about that and posted it and said, oh, I went to this restaurant, you know, I thought they'd give me a free breakfast on my birthday, et cetera, et cetera. Well, anyway, the response was overwhelming. A lot of people responded to it. It kind of hit a nerve there. And luckily for this restaurant chain, they were monitoring all of this, and they caught this. And what they did is, because of the overwhelming response on social media, they responded back with their own message and told the fellow that he could come in and get a free breakfast for his birthday. The lesson here is that if they hadn't monitored social media or hadn't caught this messaging from consumers, they might have lost business to the restaurant that was affected. And all of a sudden, you know, they might have seen a drop. And they would have never known why. So that's what's important about earned media and transparency and being responsive right away. Other facts that they found in this study was that consumers have higher expectations of brands and earned media, and brands should be genuine, meaning if you try to fake things nowadays, it's going to come back and get you. The brands also should be engaging, and the brand should understand the consumers right away. And this goes back to the fellow who wanted his breakfast for free on his birthday. Okay, there's the traditional approach to storytelling and story building is you do research, you come up with a strategy, you take the strategy, you bring it over to the creative where the concepts are merged, and then you execute the program. This is a traditional way that story building has been done. The way we do it at Martin is it's more of a collaborative give and take process where we start out with the concept of strategy, and then we immediately involve creative. And then they respond back and forth, and we kind of weave the story together until we come up with a final result. This is our approach to story building. We're going to some case studies. One that's significant for us was the American Cancer Society. So they came to us, and their problem was that they were an aging charity, and they were losing donations and memberships, and they said, how do we compete against all these new charities that are coming up with younger causes and younger people involved? And they were the oldest and most preeminent charity, respected, revered, and trusted. So what we found was that the brand's greatest strength was its greatest weakness. The men in white coats, the sterile test tubes and beakers, it was a calcified image, and it didn't work anymore. The Marcus Welbys of the past were just not touching any nerves among the people. So what we did is, we looked at others, and we said, whoever thought of cancer could be cool. You have Live Strong, you have Komen, you have Stand Up to Cancer, and you have Go Red. So what we had is, if you look at the charity as a software version, they were 1.0 in a world of 2.0 causes, and they needed to define what 3.0 would be. So So the task was more than just making ACS a sexy Me Too brand. We had to get rid of the old image and modernize and re-energize the brand. We had to find our own bracelet and make it tangible and meaningful. And we had to bring the whole campaign out into the world. We had to take them from the researcher image that they had to the lifesaver. So how the story unfolded. The idea was to tell the world about the important work they were doing and to invite ourselves to every birthday and bring some cool gifts. The story to bring dozens of world-class musicians to sing happy birthday on camera and at the same time invite artists and designers to participate based on a new cancer breakthrough. So how the story unfolded is the results were overwhelming. We had top celebrities like Justin Bieber, Rihanna, Devo, and others responded quickly. Original artwork from all over the world poured in from renowned artists and designers. The solution we came up with was an updated, engaging new website experience that pulled in users by entertaining, informing them, and enabling them to share content. Oh, I'm in trouble here. Hold on a second. Okay, here we go. So we had lots of musicians and artists that helped celebrate more birthdays. Celebrate More Birthdays was the tagline that we adopted for them, a new tagline. And how we told the story. The videos and the artwork were showcased on the new website in the birthday gallery. Visitors could review the songs, choose what they like, personalize, and then send it. Within seconds, a birthday gram arrived in the lucky recipient's mailbox on the computer, so they're able to see this instantaneously. How we told this story. The artwork was then turned into wrapping paper, posters, and limited edition prints that could be purchased with a couple of clicks. Hundreds of thousands of visitors every day walk through the virtual gallery looking at all the artwork and the videos. Thousands of dollars were raised each day as an account of all this effort. Okay, key takeaways. Celebrities, when used properly, magnify your story. Without tools for interactivity, it's a message in a bottle, not a story. Some categories are better for story sharing than others. The next case study is the Boys and Girls Club of Metro Richmond. Now, this is a group that helps disadvantaged and lower income boys and girls, succeed in life, break the mold, get out of the situation they're in, and achieve success in life. So the issue was, when they came to us, was that donors were not connecting with the members. The members or the kids didn't know how to ask what they needed. So the challenge was to develop a brand message that resonates with both donors and members. We needed to transform a complex story into a simple, positive message. And we needed to define the group as the tangible benefits and the impact on the donor makes. So, the goal was to triple incoming donations, raise awareness, expand the donor base, and have current donors donate more. The idea, just another statistic, is what we came up with. We found out that a lot of our kids were fighting to avoid becoming another statistic. The kid that drops out of school, the family member that doesn't make it to college, the member who remains jobless like his brothers and sisters, mother and father, etc. They didn't want to become this statistic that is just another statistic. And conversely, the donors didn't want to be defined by their stereotyping type image, which was, you know, the well-to-do, well-off, uncaring about the poor, etc., etc. So they didn't want that image either. So we had a universal insight. We had something here that we can connect with both groups as a common ground. So the campaign goal is to tell the children's stories, deliver a genuine, heartfelt message, bring to life the optimism that connects with target donors, create a versatile campaign. The doing. We want to give the new statistics campaign a recognizable visual that would help this idea catch fire. So we came up with this idea of an asterisk. It's a simple idea. It means that they're exceptional. The kids are exceptional. They exceed exceptions. They are an exception to the rule. The results were that commitments to donate tripled. Requests to be contacted about a donation went from 0 to 158. T-shirts, pens, cups, prints, and posters were created to help spread the word. This was a new logo we came up. I am a new statistic. And what it means is that we came up with these catch lines. The world doesn't get to decide who these kids will become. They are in control of their own futures. They don't have to be one of society's statistics. They can create new statistics for themselves. It's a very successful campaign. Okay, so why story building is a better approach? It solves the problem by grabbing the emotional juggler of the consumer. What Grant talked about in his presentation is using emotion. It doesn't tell the story. It invites the consumer to help build the story and get involved and engaged. It offers a personal experience for the consumer and compels the consumer to share the story with others. Whether it's word of mouth, on a telephone, on social media, wherever. So what's happening now is that there's a movement to revolutionize the role of the consumer. It went from passive consumption in a one-way communication with paid media to an active, cooperative experience where they participate. Why story building is right for multi-channel integrated campaigns. Well, before Amazon, there was only one place to buy books, the bookstore. Titles were limited by physical space and the whims of the big six publishers. Today, with the internet, there are hundreds of distribution channels to buy books instantly and anywhere from thousands of retailers. With the internet in their pockets, consumers can compare prices and services while looking at a product on a shelf. They can also instantly find out what other people said about the product or service. So the takeaway here is that your brand needs to be in these channels with that compelling, emotional, grabbing story to stand out among the explosion of messages. Many channels, many stories, but so little time. Your brand story should connect with consumers by being a compelling story that speaks volumes about universal human desires and concerns, like birth, death, kinship, love, acceptance, growing up and growing old. And again, this is what Grant mentioned. This is very important in telling the story and building the story. Here we have some other brand story opportunities. Walmart. Their catch line is save money, live better. Everyone wants to live better. And how can I live better when I save money? That's another story building opportunity. Virginia is for lovers. What can I love in Virginia? Where can I go? What can I do? Why is Virginia for lovers? And then again, the American Cancer Society, the official sponsor of birthdays. More birthdays equal more time. What will I do with it? These are all opportunities to expand on story building opportunities. That's pretty much it.
Thanks so much, Anthony. Everyone sees his contact information there on the screen. And by the way, Grant Johnson's was his offer to give you a free ebook of his. His email is grant.johnson@johnsondirect.com. Again, great job, Anthony and Grant. And now we have a little over 10 minutes for questions from the audience. So please send in your questions now, and I'll pick through them and ask them to the panelists. The first question is really here. It looks like it's for Grant, and it's about the VFW campaign. They're asking, how often did you post or tweet messages, and what frequency seemed to work the best?
Well, the beautiful thing about social media is we had actually 1.5 staff members here at Johnson Direct dedicated to really getting the dialogue going. But a lot of it was done by the members themselves. I mean, you had passionate women here who were just crying out for a outlet to communicate with each other because of their experiences in the military and with foreign wars. So it was really a lot of it was done by the group itself, but we started it off, and I believe we started with 1 to 3 tweets a day, and really used the Facebook page as a I guess a linchpin for the community itself to you know, to really engage with one another, and that's part of the reason it was so successful. And one thing I did want to mention, social media is really, really good at beginning the dialogue or you know, getting you to the engagement, but it's really bad at consummating the marriage. And that's where you need traditional channels like direct mail, telemarketing, face-to-face sales, and even email to close the loop and really make that story selling complete. So keep that in mind. But in this case, it was a group that was really in dire need of communication with each other. So a lot of it was, you know, interactions among the group themselves, which made it even more successful because then you know you've hit on something that was really needed.
Okay, that's a very good answer. Here's another question that can actually go to both of you. What happens when you invest a great deal into a story and because of external circumstances it doesn't work and you need to change?
Yeah, I'll take that one also. The beauty of the internet and social media is that you can change it instantly. You learn right away. So when you put something out there, you learn right away, instantly, within hours or even less than how successful it is. So you've got the opportunity to change it right away. Whereas with traditional media like print and TV and others like that, you don't have that opportunity.
And Grant, how would you answer that question if suddenly you know, a great investment was put into a story and it looks like you had to change it?
Sure. The way I would answer that is I would think that as you're trying to tell your story or as you're looking for or seeking stories to tell, there's usually more than one. So I guess in that case I would have planning and make sure that you have a backup plan or a secondary story to tell as well. And again, I think the other thing I would do is if it's a really compelling story and it's the only story you have, then I would start testing the copy platforms or the messaging or you know, how you're telling it. And just by perhaps tweaking the way it's told, you can have a lot of success. Again, I'll go back to that P90X, which I had nothing to do with, but my gosh, 22 times they failed or, again, discovered ways for it not to work. And their story, I guess, was that it wasn't really working, but they continued to move forward until they found the right way to tell that copy story and have success. So I guess the first thing would be to have a couple backup stories, and if not, then you know, just continue to try to tell the story different ways, maybe from a different vantage point, things like that. Those are some of the things I would suggest in depth.
Okay. Here's another question here for Grant. Is about asking you to expand on that part where you said you must include information for immediate acceptance of the offer.
Well, again, you know, you've got to give people a compelling reason to respond. I think that's what the question's asking. So, you know, why should I respond now? And, you know, again, what am I supposed to do now? So what? Well, you know, you're telling me a good story, or you're giving me an exclusive offer, but what do you want me to do next? So, you know, again, there's plenty of test opportunities there, whether it's a white paper, a book, you know, free evaluation, things like that. So I think you really have to do a lot of testing there, and again, make sure that you at least start with a reason why somebody would want to respond to whatever you're sending them. And that, again, because relevancy is created by the offers you make or the messaging you use, make sure it's something that is going to be relevant with them. And I could go on and answer that at length, but this is an amazing business. Sometimes people will respond to things that you didn't think they would respond to, and that's why we test. And it makes it, you know, it makes it a fun study in human psychology, if nothing else. So.
Sure thing, sure thing. Here's a question for either of you. What's some good advice for B2B social media growth on Facebook and LinkedIn?
Well, I would say that LinkedIn is the key there rather than Facebook. I think a lot of people jump to Facebook and B2B. Now, you can have some success with Facebook and B2B. But again, I would look at LinkedIn more from a B2B channel, because there you can segment by titles. You can do LinkedIn email. Most people don't understand or realize that you can I think it costs about $1 a name, but you can, if you're a premium member or if you're a corporate account, you can usually get LinkedIn email segmented by title and geography at $1 a piece or so. So that would be a way to go about that. And then if you're on a tight budget, continue to test and, you know, try different messaging and different offers and things like that to engage people. And then, again, remember, what do you want them to do after they start engaging with you? What's the ultimate goal? What do you really want them to do? Buy your product, join your membership group, what have you. And the same would apply with Facebook, but from my experience, Facebook can be successful, but it's really got more of a consumer twist to it than it does a B2B, and I don't know if Anthony wants to answer that in more detail.
Oh, yeah, I would agree with you on that. LinkedIn is the place for B2B. Facebook is more, like you said, it's more of a consumer friendly place, social place. And believe it or not, the majority of Facebook users are women. So if you had a product that you wanted to promote to women, that would be that you might consider Facebook. But if it's B2B, it's LinkedIn. For sure.
What are you seeing with Pinterest? Anything, Anthony? I mean, I know they didn't ask that question, but Pinterest is up and coming, and I can tell you from my experience, my wife, when she's bored, she loves hanging out on Pinterest. So I don't know if you've had much experience with that.
Yeah, if you look on Pinterest, if you went through it, again, it's mostly women there putting up not recipes, but pictures of food, of things that they cooked or made. It's mostly fashion. Items from fashion sites, clothing, jewelry, etc. And the few men are there put up. I see a lot of architectural type things where there's beautiful building or beautiful rooms and stuff like that. So that's where that's at. So it's mostly for women also.
Okay. And if we just continue with the B2B theme for a second, somebody's asking, how do you use a story building technique effectively with B2B? Specifically, like, this is somebody who's trying to sell complex retail IT solutions to large enterprises.
I would say testimonials and, you know, laying out in the story, here's the challenge that a customer or a client faced. Here's the solution we provided, and here's the outcome. And we can do the same for you and get in touch for a free evaluation today. I mean, that you know, testimonials, you can't underscore the importance enough of testimonials and how powerful they can be when implemented correctly. And, you know, I know I run into this a lot. People go, oh, they don't read that, they don't see that. Remember, in B2B, what most people are really looking for is they want to know that you understand their position, but more importantly, you want to understand their business. So in that instance, understanding again your segments and where you're playing the strongest. So let's say that you're playing really well in manufacturing. Well, you should have a couple good testimonials that talk about manufacturing challenges and how the IT solution simplified or overcame the challenges that people had. So again, a lot of times it comes down to understanding who your customers are and what segments are the best segments, most profitable segments, or if you don't have a testimonial, then you know you can somehow twist it or turn it into this is similar to a situation in this business and this is why. But again, I would say you know find a compelling case and explain it and get them to feel comfortable enough to take that next step and inquire and meet with them.
Okay.
Yes. I would agree with him. He's exactly right about that. It's the same thing. It's story building, story selling, whether it's B2B or it's B2C.
Okay. And, Anthony, here's a little follow-up question for your answer earlier about changing a story that's not working. Somebody's asking specifically, how do you change it and repost it?
Well, I think what Grant said is that you have like alternatives. It's the same with AV or multivariate testing for internet ads or stuff like that, where you have one and then you have a replacement if need be. It's a little tougher to do. It's a lot more work to have like two stories set up. You know, to use one or the other. It's a lot of work. It's like in the past, businesses wanted just to run ads and to, promote the product. And that's easy to do. Anybody can do that. You know, we're selling this and it's this price and you get this if you do this. That's easy. That's the easy part. But to tell the story behind that product and to compel people to look at it, that's the tough part. But, yeah, it's a lot of work, and that's how it would be done.
And in B2B, you really want to understand, you know, not only the, like I said earlier, not only the, the vertical that you're playing in, but the title that you're marketing to, because an IT director has a different set of issues than the CFO has, than the CEO has, than the director of marketing has. So, again, that's a beautiful thing about technology today and how you can vary copy based on what their real pain points are. And if you don't know those, of course, you always can test them. So, it's an ongoing learning experience, but testing is really what gets you to ROI nirvana.
Right. It looks like we have time just for one more question, and this again can go to both of you. I'm going to kind of rephrase it a little bit, but somebody is asking about how do you create a compelling story with people who are physically kind of disconnected from the cause. This is somebody asking from a fundraising perspective. Basically, you know, the prospects or the donor prospects are totally disconnected from the kind of work this nonprofit does, which is actually addresses unsustainable agriculture. How do you create a story that kind of links people, for example, who have a 9-to-5 job with that kind of thing?
Well, again, that's sort of a complex question to answer without a lot more probing, I guess. But this is for sustainable or non-sustainable agriculture.
For they're addressing unsustainable agriculture and forestry practices.
Okay. Well, again, I would look at understanding who you're trying to market to or target, if there's a profile of who that individual, what they might look like. For instance, are they single? Are they families? Do they have children? Do they not have children? You know, what are some of their hot buttons? And then crafting messaging around some of the things that might be important to them and tying them back to the cause and effect that the nonprofit's mission could have on things that are important to them. I know that's sort of vague, but, you know, without a lot more detail, it'd be hard to answer.
Sure.
Yeah. I would agree with Grant on that one, exactly. It needs a lot more detail. But again, I would create something that would engage the targeted market, the consumer, whoever you want to reach, that would engage them in a way that pertains to them somehow. In other words, you know, grab them emotionally somehow with the promotion or a creative or something, and then show them the relevance, how it pertains to them, that how, you know, saving the rainforests or the practices are important to them because. You know.
Right. Okay. That's a great answer, and thanks again to you guys for doing such a good job. And so on behalf of Target Marketing, Printing Impressions Magazines, as well as Direct Marketing IQ, thanks for attending the session. So have a great rest of your day. Thanks again.